Merry Christmas. We good? So I want to try and do something that's pretty much impossible. I know that we've had some technical difficulties and we've started late. Some of you guys have places you need to be. There's places, family waiting, things to be done. But for those that can stay and for just a few more minutes, we do want to have communion together. And I don't want us to rush too fast, move too quickly. God came such a great distance to come and meet with us. We've been celebrating the journey of love, the journey of hope, the journey of peace, the journey of joy throughout this whole Advent season. And from the most part, we've had it from the perspective of recognizing where is God in the midst of all of the chaos that is 2020. Where is he in the politics? Where is he in the violence? Where is he in the disruption? Where is he in the lockdowns and the financial strains? Where is he in the controlling experience, the feeling of powerlessness? And yet, for a lot of us, we dug in and we found different places where he met us. We had a whole series of videos of people testifying, and I know that every person in this room, if they were to sit down and think long enough and pray, I believe that God would reveal himself in a way that you could recognize his presence in your life. But tonight, and this has already been done in so many ways, I want us to kind of remember and consider the distance that God journeyed to be here, to be with us, to meet us in that moment. So in other words, we kind of went from our perspective trying to journey to those things, hope, joy, love, peace. But God went much greater distance. And we know that. We know that conceptually. But I'm going to try and do something that's absolutely impossible, and especially the finite time that we have, is remind us of that journey that he took. One of the things that makes me aware, there's a spiritual aspect, yes, of God. We think of spirit and we think of trying to live up to that. And if we fail and we're not quite there, they can hear me. We'll try and see if we can get you to follow me around the room. But I'll carry the computer around. But if we can figure out how to be more spiritual, if we're not able to live up to it, oh my gosh, the devil made me do it, or worse, I'm not spiritual enough, I'm not good enough, right? There's this idea, this spirituality that's out there that's really not obtainable to you and me. It's really not. And what I mean by that, and Frederick Buechner reminds us that we as Christians, the religious, the great blunder that we make is we try to be more spiritual than God. God shows up in a baby. As Buechner describes it, something that looks like something that one of the cows have been chewing on and spit out for a little while, right? Like the newborn baby. How many of you guys have seen a newborn baby? Not very appealing, right? Like this baby shows up, not pretty, wet, ugly. I'm not saying he wasn't cute on some level, but in that moment, not so much, right? Like, I don't know. It's just, there's a preciousness about having a baby, but it ain't something to look at, that's for sure. And so this manger, he shows up in this place. But I was thinking about it in the sense of how that happens, how that reality happens. It's tangible to us. There is a spiritual aspect of it that is real, and it's more real than we'll ever understand or ever know. One thing that occurs to me is I understand love, joy, peace, hope. Is that you don't really get those definitions or you don't understand them unless they're missing. It's more in the inverse of it. God didn't necessarily experience love, joy, peace, and hope until we wrecked it in the garden. And it now became like a longing or a desire, an empty space, that those things are words that we throw at those desires that we have. So this thing in the garden that gets broken, we get this idea in our head that if God would just simply get over himself, right? Like Doctrum talks about this, Bill Doctrum of Vanguard, he says, if we as humans would quit with this idea that God just has some sort of a malfunction, and if he could just get over our sin, things would be fine. If he would just get over it, right? That what we don't understand is what happened in the universe is something got broke. Something got shattered. And now there's a gap. There's a distance. There's a hole. And we understand these things from this hole, from this missingness, so to speak. It's kind of one of those things where you think of the analogy, the fish trying to explain what the water is like while being in the water. Just, we don't have context for it. We don't have context for holiness. We really don't have a context for that. In other words, the words love, joy, peace, hope, they only make sense, or they only begin to have meaning in this brokenness, in a weird sort of way. God may not, like I said, have even experienced these things except through this brokenness, at least in an experiential sort of way. It's a weird concept, but there's something that gets introduced here. And this is where we pick up his journey from where he came to rescue us. All journeys start with a yearning, some sort of a longing to go somewhere, right? Like, I don't go anywhere, like, I don't go to the kitchen unless I'm hungry. There's a yearning there, right? I don't go on vacation unless there's a yearning. Either I need to get away from something, or I want to go see the Grand Canyon, or, you know, neighbors, or, you know, relatives, or whatever. There's a yearning, there's a desire. And that desire comes because there's an absence of something, or maybe there's a pushing away. You want to just get rid of or change something, right? And we know, and like we just saw, that in the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth, and he created it with intention and a plan. He has this great design, and it was whole and perfect and complete until we came along and did that tragic little event in the garden. I know it was cute on TV, and you guys were awesome, and Janet, it was beautiful. But man, it was, you don't know destruction. We will never understand what the tragedy and horrific thing that happened on that day. It's indescribable. In preparing for tonight, I was drawn to the book of Hosea. And I've been charged very clearly that I can't preach Hosea on Christmas Eve. But when do I ever listen to anybody, right? I spent some time in Hosea, and I read and listened and went through that. And the thing that I grasped out of there is that yearning, that desire, that broken thing that is illustrated throughout that entire book on what God is. He's just brokenhearted. There's the one place in there it says, in Hosea 11, verse 9, it says, I am God and not man, the Holy One in the midst of thee. The point in that, in bringing that, is that verse, and I don't know if I can contextualize it in a way, reveals the gap, the otherness of us in him. These are categories. I am God and not man. And holiness. Holiness is what he's about. It's what he is. There's this, he is complete in and of himself. He doesn't need anything. But us, on the other hand, are completely broken and completely devoid except for this relationship that he has offered us. Discussing this with Dr. Williams, he referred to this passage as, first of all, that there is a category God and holiness, not man. That is, there is a distinction that has been made. That's obvious, but Doc goes further. He says it describes an unexpressible one, the one you can't even imagine, the one who is different than men. Rather, God is holy, and his holiness is achievable, like I said, with God, because it is absolute and in him and a part of him. But with man, it is only accessible to us through relationship and connectedness to him. Further, Doc goes on to say that God is so remote that Doc compared it to us to imagine a dot on a piece of paper, just a blank piece of paper, and imagine a dot. And there's no other dimension. It's just two-dimensional, just the dot. And even if it's hard to imagine the dot as devoid of length and width, in other words, if you put the dot, you can kind of look at it, but apparently mathematically you can even make that smaller. There's some way to do that. I'll trust Doc on that. But the point is mathematically it's conceivable, he says, however, if the dot wished to be tall, it has no idea what that means. If you wish to add a third dimension to it, there's no concept that can relate to it. It has no reference point. It needs to be introduced and educated even to understand what that means. We have no concept of holiness unless it's told to us. And even still, our concept is trying to imagine us having another dimension that we can't even fathom. Doc mentioned even further that string theory has discovered 10 dimensions, yet God would be outside even those dimensions. Holy, therefore, is something that we can only name but have no chance of grasping. The point here is to conceive that the distance that God is to journey is impossible for us to imagine. And for tonight, we can only get a glimpse in the brokenness of the thing, in the yearning, in the fact that we already feel this distance, this gap. And from Hosea, the yearning or the longing of a God wanting wholeness and completeness with his bride, his people, you and me. I was thinking about that feeling, and you know that feeling. You know when you're holding something maybe precious, maybe you're washing the dishes and it's that last cup or glass from the anniversary, from your wedding, and it goes and it's broke, right? Or worse, maybe it's that priceless vase, you know, that old famous, I don't know if you remember the Brady Bunch where they broke the vase, right? What about our lives? And when we broke, if you remember, some of you guys, unfortunately, you remember that day you gave away purity and you'll never get it back. Or that day when somebody violated in a way that you it can't be undone. You can't figure out and fathom any way to trust again. This is what God is experiencing with Israel in the Hosea, but with us as humans. Is that thing that just gets broke, and it seems like it's impossible. You say the word that you didn't want to say. You send that email that you wish you hadn't. That relationship, what could you have done different? What could have been, if I wouldn't have gone here or there, it would have been different. But it can't be undone. I can imagine God saying, if I only told them differently, or I only, like, you know, this is only Brad thinking. Remember, I can't grasp this. I can't fathom it. I can only use and throw my language at it. But this gap of thinking, like, what would it be like if God, if he was like me, which thankfully he's not. But what would it be like to try and get that moment back? And how many ways does he rehearse how to do it perfectly or right? But he doesn't go there, right? He goes the opposite. He goes the redeeming factor. We'll get there. But we know that brokenness. We know that irreparable feeling. And if we know that, God knows that way more than we will ever, ever imagine. We can only describe it in terms of the feeling of shame. The shame that seems to be that hole or that blackness or blankness in our sight, in our heart. The blackness where there is no light. The expression could simply be in a gasp. Or more heart-wrenching tears where you almost puke your stomach up. We hear this in God's voice. For those of you that remember in Sunday school when Doc had taught us in Amos about the voice of God cracking in the passages of Amos chapter 5, verse 2. He says this. This is the English. Doc says that the poetry in Hebrew is the cadence breaks and you can almost hear God's voice crack. I wanted to get him to read it for tonight, but I wasn't able to. Hear the word, Amos says. Hear the word which I take up for you as a didge. O house of Israel, she has fallen. She has not, will not rise again. The virgin Israel, she lies rejected, neglected on her land. There is nothing to raise her up. For thus says the Lord God, the city which goes forth 1,000 strong will have 100 left, and the one who goes forth with 100 strong will have 10 left in the house of Israel. Like I said, Doc says the actual Hebrew has got a broken cadence, and the hearing of it, he hears the broken voice of God, the crack that one has of heartbreak. I hear this voice when God says to Adam, "Where are you?" It is possible that this is God's first experience with this feeling, this brokenness, this absence, this darkness, this gasp. I don't know about you, but that feeling to me feels unfixable. Like it can never be made right. It wasn't for many thousands of years, so often we want things to be fixed and put back together immediately. We don't want to have to experience the gasp. We don't want to have to experience the yearning and the distance, the inability to love or have joy, peace, or hope. What gets me is this idea that God longs and yearns and desires for us, for you. That brokenness was created because of our stepping away from Him. Think about that for a second. He yearns for us. That broken thing that He's experiencing for the first time, that pain, that shame, feeling, whatever that is, not that He has done anything wrong. It's not the same. I'm not trying to be theological. I'm just trying to understand the heart of our living God and what it took for Him to make it to us and the desire that would make Him want to even come at all. The distance was not short. It was infinitely traveled. I picture the cosmos and how vast it is. If you guys were out there watching, anybody watch for the star? Anybody go look out at the star of the Bethlehem star is what I think they called it. The Saturn and, what was it? Saturn and Jupiter coming together. It was beautiful. But it reminded me again of that saying that God's not bumping around the stars somewhere. The universe is bumping around God somewhere. The distance and the vastness and the hugeness of God. The otherness. And yet, He sees you. He sees me. His eye is on the sparrow. He knows the number of hairs on your head.
this.
In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. And he was in the beginning with God. All things came into being through him. And apart from him, nothing came into being that has come into being. In him was life, and the life was the light of men. And the light shines in the darkness, and the darkness did not comprehend it. And there was a man sent from God named John, and he came as a witness to testify about this light, so that all might believe through him. He was not the light, but he came to testify about the light. There was the true light, which coming into the world enlightens every man. And he was the world, and the world was made through him. And he would not know him. And the world would not know him, I'm sorry. He came to his own, and those who were his own did not receive him. But as many as received him, he gave them the right to become children of God, even to those who believe in his name, who were born not of blood, not of the will of the flesh or the will of man, but of God. We get to be called children of God. That tangible reality has shifted, and he has begun. I remember Adam Ayers talking about how this, talking about the cosmos and the spig and the expanse of it, and sort of like accelerating past stars, and really actually starting from the throne room, whatever that would be like if you could imagine it. But the light and the Son of Man and the glory of all of that would look like. And coming all the way across space and time and whatever that looks like. And you can almost imagine all the movies we've watched, Star Wars and warp speed and light flashing and all of this stuff. And coming in and coming, and then all of a sudden you see the Earth and it gets kind of bigger. You've seen those pictures from the moon, and even the Hubble telescope and so forth looking back at us, and it's getting bigger and bigger. And it's like even the sound and the crescendo, and then all of a sudden, bam! Wah! Where the baby is born in a manger. The invasions come. The distance is no longer the distance that it was. But he has come, Emmanuel, here to dwell with us. And that's what we testify to. That's what this season is about. That's why we gather and bother to even go through all the troubles and technical difficulties and all this stuff, to say God is great and God has fixed things and he is still fixing things. There is more to come. Easter's still a couple months off, yeah? We'll celebrate that one when it gets here. But that's the thing, and Marquita says this all the time, right? That this birth only makes sense in the shadow of the cross. And the shadow of the cross only makes sense in the glory of the resurrection. So we're going to celebrate tonight. We're going to, what are we doing right now? Are we going to play another song, or are we passing out while we're playing? We're going to have communion together. And as you're coming up, I wonder, Emily, do you want to share live, or do you want me to play your audio?
I can share live.
Can you turn her on? Hang on just a second. We got to turn you on first. All right. This is Emily, by the way, and she's the one who did that solo. Amazing. They're clapping, I promise. Oh,
thanks, guys.
They clapped louder when you actually did it. But
thanks,
now they're clapping
guys.
Again.
I just wanted to share. Can everyone hear? Like a thumbs up? Okay, cool. Sweet. Thanks, guys. I just wanted to share something really cool when Brad talked to me about the song and Paul talking about, doing the song. Around that time, I'd started like an Advent devotional on the Bible app. And the day that I ended up recording the song, the devotion that day was about Mary and when the angel Gabriel came to her and essentially told her, you know, that she would be, that like God had picked her to carry the Messiah, which is pretty monumental. And I have to be honest, all of my life growing up, that story has actually made me very anxious and fearful. It's almost a frightening, I mean, it was a frightening encounter. But the Lord gave me a completely new lens and perspective. And he kind of showed to me what an extraordinary, joyous thing that was for Mary too. I mean, that was a blessing. She's going to be carrying the Messiah, and just what a like humbling, incredible celebratory experience. You know, hope is coming into the world, and we get to participate with God. Mary got to participate with God in bringing that in, and it just brought such a new perspective and lens to Christmas even. So I just wanted to share, I don't know, I found that very exciting and very celebratory. And it's, I just love that the Lord would even just take the time to shift my perspective. So when I read that story, I'm feeling how beautiful and celebratory and wonderful it is. So I hope that, I just hope that permeates into this season and into tomorrow, that celebration of the birth of Christ. Thanks, guys. Thanks for letting me share. Thanks, Brad.
Captive Israel and mourns in lonely exile here until the Son of God appears. Rejoice, rejoice, Emmanuel shall come to thee, O Israel. Oh, come now, day spring, come and cheer our spirit by thy advent here. Dispersed in gloomy clouds of night and death's dark shadow put to flight. Rejoice, rejoice, Emmanuel shall come to thee, O Israel. Now, King of David, come and open wide our heavenly home. Make safe the way that leads on high and clothe the path to misery. Rejoice, rejoice. Emmanuel shall come to thee, O Israel.
Rejoice.
Rejoice, rejoice, Emmanuel shall come to thee, O Israel. Shall come to thee, O Israel. Shall come to thee, O Israel.
Yeah. Okay. If you're able, please kneel. There's many debates, many arguments over the centuries on what this actually is, this little piece of bread. Some have called it the body of Christ, the actual flesh and blood. Some say it's a symbol. We're here today celebrating that God entered into a body of physical, tangible flesh and blood. It's amazing that we can celebrate with this little cracker the actual presence of Christ in our lives. This represents in so many ways the distance that he came to meet you and me, this broken piece of cracker. Let's partake. God, we thank you so much for the distance that you did go to meet us, that you have come to meet us, that you are the God Emmanuel, that you are in us, that you have dwelt, set up home, shop, house inside us somehow, that we are animated by you and you alone. If you have your cup, maybe raise it to the sky. Been rather somber in some ways, the approach, the thinking, the consideration, the brokenness, and all the damage that was done by us, creating this distance that we are talking about with God. But we raise the cup because there's a celebration to be had. There is the Advent, the second coming is what we're celebrating with this. Not just the first coming, but he is going to come again, and he's going to make all things right. That we don't have to live, there is sorrow still, and there's still brokenness and sin, and we don't understand, and there's a lot of theology and all that kind of stuff, but we know that he came once, and he promised that he is going to come again to fix all of it. No more tears, no more sorrow. We won't understand love, joy, peace, and hope because it'll be made right in a way that we will not fathom. We don't even have a clue to what that holiness looks like. So we raise this cup really in naivete and like, God, do something. We don't know, but we know it's going to be good. But what we want to do is we want to see you and we want to meet you and we want to know what you are and what you're like and who you are. We want to see you face to face. So God, please come quickly. Come quickly. But mostly right now for tonight, we just say Merry Christmas. And thank you for starting this thing right. In Jesus' name, amen.